A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. When your car's engine is running, even at slow speeds, the valves must move up and down many times a second. When carbon or varnish interferes with this important valve action, your engine's in trouble. The thing to do is have your Amoco man pour 4 magic ounces of Amoco 586 into the gas tank. From there, Amoco 586 gets to the heart of the trouble, clears sticky valves, makes your engine run better. Amoco 586, it's great for engines. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. This government today gave the world's communist regime serious cause to examine the debit and credit side of the East-West conflict, using the terms debit and credit in the very real sense of bad and good business. That step was taken by a formal notice to Russia and 4 satellite nations that we are canceling all tariff concessions on goods they ship to us. And that means, in effect, it will be more difficult for those governments to get the very much desired American dollars, which now go to them under reciprocal trade agreements, which stand as the monument to the statesmanship of Cordell Hull. The governments immediately affected by the raising of tariffs to the 1930 level, the consequent blocking of dollars, are Russia, Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Romania. Czechoslovakia is next once the State Department figures out the necessary legal steps, and the department intends to bring China in, too, by a ban on the importation of furs. That will also include Russia and will be later noted in the shops in a growing scarcity of such genteel articles as ermine, fox, Kalinsky, marten, mink, muskrat, and weasel. Today's action was taken by mandate of Congress, which voted for the withdrawal of the trade benefits and the ban on the furs by amendments written into the legislation extending the reciprocal trade program. Just what the new action is going to mean in dollars and cents to businessmen and exporters in the communist countries is something impossible to figure out just yet. It's possible that since those governments exercise trade monopolies anyway, they'll continue shipments at the higher cost. The logical effect of the action would be to raise the prices of some communist goods sold in America, making it more difficult for them to compete with similar items produced here. But some economists don't think there'll be much appreciable alteration in the limited American imports from communist countries, and they point out an undeniable fact of life. Anyone able to buy ermine, mink, or Kalinsky won't have to go in rags because of a little more tariff. My fashion advisor incidentally advises me that the Kalinsky is an Asiatic mink, one of the best. Its fur sometimes known as red sable. So far as I can learn, no Kalinsky has ever emigrated to America. The USA made it a 1-2 economic punch at the communists today. The State Department has sent 2 more notes demanding that Russia stop stalling on the settlement of its long overdue $11 billion lend-lease account, return at once 672 naval vessels loaned to the Soviets in World War II. The Russians have made an offer for those ships the United States refuses to take seriously, less than 1/3 of the value we put upon them. The timing of these events today would seem worthy of comment. The United States pressing an advantage gained in forcing the truce talks in Korea, serving notice of its displeasure at the jailing of American businessmen and reporters, the expulsion of American diplomats. And for those with a taste for the spice of irony, there is a White House announcement today. President Truman asks the Russian government to acquaint its people with a congressional resolution which reaffirms American friendship for all people, including those of the Soviet Union. This was a resolution recently adopted by the Senate and House. It might be filed under the classification of generalities, glittering. Concerning those Korean truce negotiations, 7 days of crossing T's and dotting I's resulted today in the departure of a convoy from the North Korean capital of Pyongyang to the city of Kaesong, 100 miles away. The convoy consists of 5 jeeps and trucks flying white flags and is carrying a number of very much jolted-up communist negotiators. The road they are traveling has been under the supervision of American Air Force wrecking crews, but who have laid off now on orders of General Matthew Ridgway. He has also immunized a 5-mile area around Kaesong as a neutral zone. Ridgway will send his negotiators by the much more comfortable transit system of helicopter, weather permitting, and the opening remarks will be exchanged tomorrow afternoon, United States time, Sunday in Korea. The reporting of this event and the principal negotiations to follow seems to be a news story in itself, and we ask CBS correspondent Bob Pierpoint in Tokyo to get that story for us. Here is his report, recorded late today.
During the coming week of ceasefire negotiations in Korea, people everywhere will be waiting for the very latest news reports from Kaesong, that ancient, battered, and bombed city just south of the 38th parallel. That's why one of the most difficult problems facing General Ridgway and his staff is how to get the news out as completely and quickly as possible without damaging the extremely delicate balance of the negotiations. That last phrase is important. Without damaging the extremely delicate balance of the negotiations. In spite of the disappointment of some newsmen, it was probably a good thing that GHQ here in Tokyo decided to keep all correspondents back in Seoul, some 30 miles south of Kaesong. That's about the only possible way of making sure that no wrong word gets out at the right time. In a special memorandum issued to the press today, Colonel Patrick Welch, the public information officer of the United Nations Command, described the setup for correspondence during the coming negotiations. Perhaps the most important thing is that press coverage will be primarily by official communique and briefing, no on-the-spot reports. Newsmen will stay at the regular correspondence billets in Seoul, at the once comfortable and modern Naija Hotel. According to Colonel Welch and GHQ, the Naija will in some mysterious manner be expanded, perhaps by knocking out the walls, to accommodate around 200 correspondents. The main thing is not living conditions, of course, it's getting out the news. And here the Army is certainly doing its best. Each evening, correspondents will be briefed by a special Army spokesman and will then be given the facilities of 5 telephone lines to Tokyo, plus a number of teletypes and 4 radio men, one voice broadcast line, to get the news out to the waiting world. We hope to bring you direct broadcasts nightly on the area of the negotiations covered during the day. Finally, the Air Force is offering the services of one of its fastest jet fighter planes, which will fly twice daily to Tokyo with any special materials, such as recorded radio tapes and television films. If and when a final armistice is reached, the UN command says it hopes the signing ceremony can be arranged at a location which will allow a direct, on-the-spot broadcast. But that, of course, depends largely on the communists. This is Bob Pierpoint in Tokyo. Now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
The United States is proceeding with plans for a Japanese peace treaty and will issue invitations later this month to about 50 nations to attend the signing conference in San Francisco opening September 4th. Those sessions will last about 4 days, will be held in the Opera House where the United Nations Charter was signed 6 years ago. The meeting is to be purely formal. It's expected all issues will have been argued out previously, except, of course, the important one of Russian participation. To date, the Russians have had no part in the preliminary negotiations, nor do they recognize the substance of the treaty as it now stands. But some State Department officials think it's entirely possible they will accept an invitation to the San Francisco conference, show up to sign up with the rest. Today's announcement of the calling of that conference might be interpreted as one more evidence of a more positive and aggressive attitude by the USA in dealing with Russia, along with the Korean truce developments. Frederick Vanderbilt Field was in and on his way out of jail today, although he'll have to spend one night, sentenced by federal judge Sylvester Ryan in New York to 90 days for refusing to reveal the names of bondsmen for the 4 fugitive communists, later ordered released on bail by appeals judge Thomas Swan in New Haven pending formal appeal of the contempt sentence. Before Field's sentencing and his scheduled release, the 7 communists who surrendered were loaded into an armored bus in New York today, and they started an 8-hour nonstop trip to Lewisburg Federal Prison in Pennsylvania, where they are to begin their 5-year sentences for conspiracy. President Truman today took action under authority of the draft law passed last month by Congress, issued an order extending for 1 year enlistments of all members of the armed forces who otherwise would be released during the year commencing Monday. But the order does not extend the service of men whose normal enlistments expired during the past year and were extended by a previous order. Beginning next week, it will be permitted for new automobiles to come equipped with a spare tire, which the Defense Production Administration recently banned. The order is being lifted, it is said, because of an improvement in the rubber situation, a reduction in passenger car production. The United States Senate continues its discussion of ethics in government, and the discussion seems to be conducted in a manner which would lead one to wonder if it means very much, if the senators themselves take it very seriously. Following the revelations of the Reconstruction Finance Corporation investigation, stories about mink coats, deep freezes, free hotel accommodations, White House influence, five percenters, and all that, The senators felt perhaps a study should be made of what appeared to be an atrophy of morality in government. So a labor subcommittee under the chairmanship of Senator Douglas of Illinois undertook the job, specifically at studying the need for a special commission of distinguished citizens to look into morality and ethics of government in general and propose means to raise the standards. All very general, as it was intended to be, Senator Douglas himself said they wanted academic observations. And that exactly is what is embarrassing the senators now, because the witnesses who were invited to give their views are not under oath. They may not be held accountable legally for what they say or neglect to say. They may not be sued for statements made at the hearings, which become part of the official record of Congress. But at the past few sessions, they have departed from the academic approach. Some specific accusations have been made. For instance, Michael Strait, chairman of the American Veterans Committee, testified that Leslie Biffle, secretary of the Senate, allows the use of his office for lobbying purposes. Biffle has no way of making Strait prove that in court. He can only say, as he has said, the charge is baseless. The committee was embarrassed when Drew Pearson took the golden opportunity of presenting his testimony a variety of accusations he has published and broadcast in recent years against members of Congress and others. Today, Representative Bennett of Florida told the committee that someone trying to land government contracts had offered him substantial cash to help him meet the right people. Bennett named no names. He did not say whether he had reported this offer to law enforcement officers, nor did committee members question him, nor comment extensively. Bennett did say he rebuffed the offer, that he gave a lecture to the man who made it. Well, that might be one way of eradicating the evils of the sale of influence and the corruption of lawmakers, but it would seem to be a method which would take considerable time before its efficacy could be noted. One may surmise that the influence buyer to whom Representative Bennett spoke so righteously took his proposal to someone else, someone more amenable to the theory that silence is golden. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
In the early days of motoring, a fellow just naturally expected tire trouble, punctures, blowouts, skids. Tire failures were on every driver's mind, and he drove accordingly. Today, tire trouble is the exception rather than the rule. We're apt to forget all about our tires. We don't even give them a glance, but they do wear out. The tread does get thin. The tire gets too slick to hold the road. And a bump that a new tire wouldn't even notice can punch a hole in an old tire. Don't take your tires for granted. Let your Amoco man check them. He'll look them over carefully and tell you the truth about them. If they're still okay, he'll be glad to tell you so. If they're in need of a little fixing up, he'll do it for you. If they're pretty far gone, if they're dangerous to drive on, he'll advise you to replace them with new, tough Amoco tires. And that's good advice, for Amoco tires are super tires, warranted by the American Oil Company for more wear, service, and savings. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
Jacob A. Malik left our shores today and went home to Russia for a 2 months vacation, boarded the Gripsholm in New York to discover he'd forgotten his passport, and a secretary was rushed to his Park Avenue apartment to get it. Malik's luggage included 10 crates, which the U.N. delegate declined to discuss, and before he left, he said he was all smiles. Best luck and wishes to those in our country and this country who fight for peace and friendship. And that's the footnote to the news.
One thing every housekeeper knows is that you can't just clean the house once and forget it. You've got to keep cleaning it again and again, for dust keeps collecting. Dust keeps collecting in your car's engine, too. But Amoco's Premium Plus Permalube motor oil fights dust because this wonderful oil cleans as it lubricates. For Permalube motor oil and other famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck on Monday. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.